Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast. Josh here. I'm actually like a correspondent news reporter reporting live to you right now. Well, not live because you're obviously listening to this maybe whenever you want in the future, but I'm in Portland, Oregon. Wait, or Oregon. I'm in Portland, Oregon. Oregon. Which Brandon, which is it?
Oregon. Oregon.
Oregon. Okay, yeah. That's where I am right now with my good buddy Brandon Vaughn. Just having a great time with him and his family. We've become good friends. And we're going to do a podcast because we have so much to share with you guys. But more importantly, the reason I'm here is I've kind of twisted Brandon's arm. I've asked him to take some time out of his busy schedule to help me add more training content into the Automate Grow Sell Bootcamp. You know, we've had hundreds of people go through it. It's been unbelievable, life-changing in many, many cases. But there's some stuff that like needs to be updated or I'd like to get an outside perspective on. And Brandon has an incredible company. And even though he probably doesn't want me bragging on him too much, so you understand what he's done, his company's like north of 3 million now. And he was actually a lot further ahead than I thought. Their goals for this year is really high. And he's just a regular guy, but he has a very systemized business. In fact, if you guys follow me on Facebook, I'm going to have some videos coming out showing his fleet of trucks at one of his three locations. I'm going to have just an overview of his shop, some of the internal systems they do, and just kind of get some like behind the curtain footage of kind of how they do business and what his philosophy is. And that's really why I'm here. And I wanted to sit down and talk with him today briefly with the podcast, but we're going to make it fun. We're going to Brandon Vaughnicize it.
I like that.
So Brandon's going to interview me for half of it. I'm going to interview him because, well, it's really late at night. We're delirious, and it sounded like a lot more fun to do it that way. So who wants to go first? How about paper, scissors, rock? One time, all or nothing. All
right, here we go.
Ready? Oh, wait. You do the paper, scissors, and then you do it, but it's supposed to be paper, scissors, one, two, three, then shoot, right?
Let's do it. You got it.
Are we doing it your way?
We'll do it your way.
Okay. Paper, scissors, rock, shoot. Ha! I won. Okay, so that means I'll interview you first. Okay, that was weird. I wonder what this will be like on audio. Well, I'm going to listen back later. Okay, here's the topic. It's actually really, really good stuff. The topic is our top three mistakes. So we spent several minutes before we recorded this and both wrote down what our biggest mistakes were in business. And that's really hard because I've made like so many mistakes, it's hard to narrow them down, but there are certain ones that rise to the surface when I think about them, and I know that's true for Brandon too. So let's start with the first one, Brandon. If I was to ask you, what is the first of your top three mistakes that you think you've made while you've been scaling your business over the past 4 or 5 years?
See, I think you need to clarify. It actually took us 30 seconds to come up with three mistakes, and then it took us like 5 minutes to narrow down the big list that we had.
Exactly. There's countless mistakes, but some of them are more painful than others. What do you got?
So the first one that I wrote down was not creating accountability systems for middle managers. So it was what I also call delegation by abdication. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, sweet. You can take care of this for me. Awesome. Here you go. It's all yours. And then just kind of turn in a blind eye and just, you know, they got it. They got it taken care of. Everything's good. And you don't need to check in with them until something's drastically wrong. And then you come in and you really have no one to blame but yourself because you haven't actually created
good systems. Yeah, but we still blame them in the moment because it's definitely their fault, right? As it happens, right? In real time, I know that's how I felt, right? I mean, how long did you delegate by abdication, which is a really fancy word. Maybe you could elaborate on that. But how long did you live in that before you finally realized that it was the wrong way?
I think probably what ended up happening is once I hired like my first general manager, it felt really, really good. I felt super businessy and really special and really awesome. Like I made it, you know, because right. I could be up in my house and we could go on vacation and like the business would be running awesome. I didn't have to check in, like things were good. And, I'd say pride was probably the biggest reason why I kind of just let things go and let things run. And then you come back into your business and you realize that things are not at all what they should be because you didn't create accountability systems. You didn't say, okay, this is what you have to report on every single week. You got to check in with me. You know, putting those systems of accountability in there so that things don't get bad. And I think that's what the abdication comes in, is that you just like kind of throw it over here and then you kind of wipe it out of your mind completely and you just walk away from it. and be like, oh, one less thing that I have to worry about. When in reality, that's totally the wrong way to delegate. It's not delegation at all.
Is it like more or less just assuming that they got this without going through the long process of clearly communicating not only their job expectations, but, you know, coaching them over and over that whole process, yeah, that development?
Yeah. You know, that I had a really awesome business mentor that I worked with, and he said there's three steps in a training process. The first one is tell, then show, and then watch. Like, until you've followed all three of those steps to their completion, you really haven't trained anyone to do anything correctly. And I think as business owners, what we have a tendency to do is like tell them what they do, and you're like, sweet, you got it. And or maybe you might show them, but then you're like, okay, good, great. And then you just walk away from the situation. And then you come back later and you're like, whoa, I don't understand. How come you haven't gotten this thing? But you didn't follow those three steps. And I mean,
it's funny. It kind of goes back to the core issue of, should we blame ourselves or should we blame other people? And yeah, people hate it when I say that because they're like, Josh, you know, you don't understand. My employee, he stabbed a customer. It's like, okay, you win. That's valid. Right. It's not you. It was definitely that guy. But no, the general point is that if in general your default rule is to look at yourself when bad things happen, it's easier to fix. Because if you're having trouble developing leaders underneath your leadership, which is that middle management thing that Brandon's talking about, it's because of you not clearly communicating. So that's good. We could spend days on that, Brandon.
It's true. But it's my turn now.
Oh, okay.
I could ask you a question.
Oh, perfect. Okay, I'm ready.
So Joshua Latimer, what was one of your top mistakes that you made in building your business?
Well, the audience is not going to believe this, but you have not seen my paper, correct? We did not share each other's papers with each other.
Nope.
Assuming people know how to do their job. Okay. I kid you not. This is not top of my list. That's weird. I wanted to say something when you were answering because I had the same thing. It's more or less the same answer. And it's not understanding that communication is not an event. It's a habit. And so when you communicate to employees, you don't tell them, you know, do this, fill out your paperwork, put it here. Okay, cool. You got it. Yeah, I got it, boss. And then you leave and then you bite their head off and they didn't do it, you know, 45 days later. Right. It's an ongoing, perpetual, non-negotiable, no exceptions, no excuses conversation done by you. You create the narrative on a daily and a weekly and a monthly basis. Eventually it gets baked into your culture and it works and you can leave. But it takes some time for that to happen. I didn't realize that. So my head moves a mile a minute, and so do most entrepreneurs and most small business owners. If you're a maniac and started your own company like us, you think quick and you move fast. And when you hire someone that is just a regular old employee, there's nothing wrong with the fact that they don't think like that. So sometimes we have to downshift and actually do what what you said was amazing, which was you said you have to tell them, show them, and then watch them. I was moving way too quickly, and I didn't provide the proper communication for people to do their job, and it was totally my fault, and it's a nightmare, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing about it is that it's kind of a pride thing. It's kind of a humility thing that you have to work yourself through to realize.
I'm actually the most humble person I know. I don't think I struggle with that.
I was
going to
say that. I was going to say you are a pretty remarkably humble person. it's one of those things where, you know, if you're – it's an exercise in humility to realize that other people don't think the way that you do, and to realize that the way that they think is not the wrong way to think. It's just that people communicate in different levels. You have auditories, you have visuals, you have handsy feelsy people, not in a weird way, but you just have you have people that just need to experience things for themselves for them to actually grasp and learn how to do something. And your job as the leader of a company is to learn how other people communicate and how they learn, and how to communicate to those people in a way that, you know, sets them up to be successful.
Yep, I agree. And it's not easy. You guys better be reading some books and like doing your homeworks and stuff and watching your videos late at night and getting ready, or it's going to be hard. And not to drag this out, but that if you can't build that layer of management in between you and the techs, the people you have working in the field serving your customers, if that doesn't exist, that's okay. But your life will be a nightmare and you're going to work 7 days a week like a maniac, and you will be a slave to your company. It's that middle layer that really sets you free. Mm-hmm. So nailing that is huge. So, all right, table turned back. Brandon, what is the second, and not that they're in necessarily a particular order, maybe yours are, but what's your second mistake you want to share that you've that you've made?
This one was for, this was kind of like an epiphany moment I had when I finally realized what I was doing was utterly wrong and really, really hard to control. Showing negative emotions to employees. You know, how to be that CEO and the leader.
You're the one everybody to like you, super overly nice guy, and they walk into like a doormat guy?
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's because the hard part for me was that I would be having a really, really crap day. I mean, just really miserable. Everything was going wrong. I'd be super stressed out. And I would show it. I'd walk into the company. I'd be down. I'd be irritated. I'd be venting to my employees. I'd be telling them too much information about, you know, the problems that we were having and how this was having an issue and that was having an issue. And the thing is that at the end of the day, I'd look around and everybody mirrored my emotions. So if I was negative and I was down and I was depressed, then suddenly everyone else was depressed and they were disengaged and it just kind of rippled through. And I think the hardest part to do as an entrepreneur and as a business owner is to be on for your employees, to be the visionary, to be inspirational.
I misunderstood. I just don't want the audience to be confused. What you're saying is totally awesome. I thought you were saying you had a hard time, you know, being hard on your employees or holding them accountable. That's not what you're talking about, right? You're talking about not letting your personal CEO behind the curtain stress bleed into their lives, even though it doesn't have to affect them.
A huge turning point for me was when I made the decision that no matter what, when someone said, "Hey, Brandon, how's it going?" I answered, "I'm doing awesome. How are you doing?" You know, the big smile and a high five and just like, "Yeah, absolutely. Things are going great." And even if you were dying inside and you wanted to just curl up in the fetal position in the corner and be like, "No one talk to me. Don't look at me. I'm a failure as a business owner." Right. You can't be that for your team. You have to be on. And when you show up to work, it's your job as CEO. And even if you are an owner operator with one single employee, it's your job as CEO and inspirer and leader to cast that positive environment for your staff and your employees. And so I made that mistake a lot when I was growing because it was really stressful to grow as quickly as we did some of the years, and came with a lot of headaches. I had my first panic attack in my business in like year two. Never had a panic attack in my life. Like, it was hard not to wear how I felt on my sleeve. And so it cost us, it cost the team, and it impacted my culture. And so I had to make a mind shift, and that was a tough lesson to learn.
Man, that is, thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. And it's really important for people to understand the blood, sweat, and tears and how hard this was. I mean, this didn't just happen. We're sitting in Brandon's office. He has actually three different locations now. And we're in his original one. And it's amazing. And we're walking up. He has a loft up in the shop. And it's really cool. And we're walking up there. And he's like, "You know, I built this myself, Josh. Like, out of necessity, you know." It's like, I could just see him out there sawing and hammering and answering the phone. And yeah, it's just amazing. But it is a very immature form of leadership to get really frustrated in front of your staff. And it takes a lot of discipline to keep your mouth shut and to have a steady hand. Because if there's one thing that employees really want more than anything, it's certainty and stability. And when you're running around like a maniac, guess what they're doing when they go home? They're like, they're job hunting is what they're doing.
Right.
Because they have no sense of security. So yeah, it's very good.
It's true. Okay. So back to you, man.
Okay.
Flipping it back. Number two, mistake for you in business.
This one is actually applicable to my software company, but it still will help. It'll still help all the service companies, right? Because I had the cleaning business for a long time, but when we were writing our top three mistakes, I couldn't help but have the certain ones come to the top of my head that are most recent for me. But this is what it is. Thinking if I build it, they will come.
Mm. It totally applies to service businesses. It does. Are you kidding me?
It does.
This service is going to be the best service that anyone will ever want, this add-on service, and I want to buy this thing for $1,000, and then it's like customers are going to want it, and they're going to do it.
Yeah. All I got to do is buy this huge truck mount awesome thing, and then I'm going to be a bajillionaire. No, but the reason for me, I didn't have that problem with my service company. I was hustling and working dark to dark and knocking doors. Literally, I really did that, you know, for forever, for like as long as I could. I sucked at it. I wasn't good at it, but I worked and sold and ground. But with the software, just due to complete ignorance, I looking back, it's like, I don't even know why I thought this. I didn't realize I consciously thought it. But I really thought if you build something really neat and really useful and amazing because it's on the internet, that you win. And so I did not, as salesy as I can be, and I love sales and marketing and inspiring people, I had zero plan in place at all when we launched StreetBidder, which was what it was called originally, and then we changed the name to Send Jim. And so it was kind of like crickets. Like, we didn't sell that much. I think when we originally launched, we sold like $60,000 worth of software the first like month and a half. Which might sound like a lot. It's not when you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in years of your life, right? Because I had like one channel partner and he like promoted it to his list and did like an interview, and then I was sitting there and nothing happened. It's like, okay, we got like 50 customers and stuff. Look, with your service company, I don't care what kind of company you have, I can tell you for sure, like, I can't say it's a more important part of the plan. You know, I'm talking about the difference between sales and marketing and the product or service itself, but it's at a minimum, even equal partners with it. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have the best product in the world and fail, and the best service in the world and fail if you can't sell it and market it. And you can have a really mediocre, crappy product and make billions of dollars. So we've seen that over and over. So if you build it, they will not come. I learned it the hard way. Hopefully you do not. Do you have anything to elaborate on with that?
I'll just say, when you built it, I signed up for it.
So yes! You were one of the people on that email.
I was original StreetBidder, baby. Love that thing.
Yeah, and didn't it break and like you got mad at us? Not going to talk about that in the podcast. Our software is perfect. It's perfect. Sign up today. You go to
sendjump.com. Actually, no, it didn't break, but yeah, there was definitely some speed bumps on it, but... I mean, you took care of us.
Business is so easy, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's so easy. It's the best thing ever. Everyone should start a business because we'll just make so much. It's like free money. No, not at all. So what's number three for you, Brandon? Okay. Your third mistake you can share.
This one sounds like, I don't know if this sounds like a humble brag, but being too nice to employees.
It's valid, but it is a humble brag when you're interviewing someone and you're like, what's your greatest weakness? And you're like, it's just caring too much. You know, it's
like, it's going that way. I kind of realized, I was like, how do I word this? But you know what it is it's not fixing issues that you see are problems the second you notice them. Like, give you a couple for instances. Your company policy is you don't show up in bleached out pants and wrecked shirts and blue jeans or ripped blue jeans and, you know, cigarettes hanging out of your mouth. Like, our company policy is that of professionalism. But people come in and I have a hard time
sending them home.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like a dad to be like, tuck that shirt in. Why are those pants unacceptable? And you need to get back home.
Pull those pants up, young man.
You know, but that's like a small instance. And the bigger instances are you just really, really like the people that you work with. I think that being a business owner is one of the most incredible privileges in the entire world, because you get to pick exactly who the people are that you get to work with. I'm just thinking about that for a second. Any employee in the world, like, they do not really get to choose who their coworkers are, but you as a business owner, you really do get to choose who you get to work with, and you spend 50% of your life with the people that you work with. I mean, your waking hours, like at least 40%.
I've never even heard someone say that, but that is freaking awesome.
This is like, I mean, to me, that is a huge special privilege. So, I mean, I care about my employees like their family, and probably to some. In my previous parts of my, you know, journey into entrepreneurship and as a business owner, probably too much. Like, I probably like cared a little bit, you know, too much about like wanting, you know, hurting their feelings, making sure they're okay, making sure that they liked me. And when you're a boss, you have to, you know, still set the line. You have to make sure that your employees follow, because it's not just your employees that you care about. It's also your customers and making sure that your business is healthy so that you can make everyone's paychecks. Like, you know, it's time to put your dad pants on sometimes and make sure that things are good. So it's more just, one of my biggest mistakes that I made was the second I noticed there being a problem with someone, I would instantly go up to them and tell them, hey, you know, this needs to be fixed. And the amazing thing is that when you do that right away, rather than waiting weeks on end, it gets way, way, way harder to do it. The longer time
way goes, because now you're building it up, and then they're set,
and then all of a sudden they're like shocked that you're even mentioning it.
Right.
So it's like you have to, you know, bring it up the second you see it. And I didn't do that when, you know, for the first several, you know, 3 years, 4 years of trying to grow my business, it was very, very hard for me to do that, and it cost me. I mean, like, you know, lost some really good employees to kind of a cancerous attitude just because I gave them too much leeway, and then it ended up being weird.
I've done the same thing. You know, I've always joked that I've been stabbed in the back by employees, but I've also been stabbed in the front. But the times you're stabbed in the front are the ones where you go, you kind of cross that professionalism line. Maybe you're starting to give them personal loans on a recurring basis, or you're in too deep in a way that's, it's not inappropriate, like, it's wrong legally or something, but there's like this box, and you need to be a dynamic, amazing leader that deeply, genuinely cares for your team. But there is lines in the box, and if you cross it, things can get weird, and some of the biggest pain can come from having those types of relationships. Maybe that didn't even make sense. If it doesn't, I'm sorry. But for those of you that have had that happen, I think it makes a lot of sense, right?
I think it's tough when you the people who you end up getting closest to have the ability to hurt you the most. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I mean, that's true of every aspect of our life. But when it happens in business and you let that happen too much, it can end up causing a lot of problems.
That's why it's so important to make sure everybody in your company understands the rules of the game. Because you don't have to be the bad guy to be the bad guy. The rules are the bad guy. If you ever watch that show back in the day, there's this British nanny. Forget her name, Joe, I think. And she had this
911?
It was like that, but her technique was a little different, but it was called Super Nanny.
Oh, yeah.
And so she went to these houses, and the kids were just absolutely insane. They're little demons running around the house, just terrorizing. And within 2 or 3 days, she had them just completely fine. But one of the things she did is she had this thing, this board, like a whiteboard, that had the rules on it. And so let's say one of the kids is a biter. And so she'd write bite, and then below it said, you go in the naughty spot for 5 minutes. You bite again, then this happens. And then if you say a swear word, you little monster 5-year-olds dropping F-bombs running around the house. If you do that, then this happens. And if you do this, then this happens. And so she'd sit down and give him a cookie, be like, okay, cool. Like, here's the new rules. It's really awesome. Like, you're a great kid. You know, give you a noogie. Okay, cool. You're good. Just go live your life. Be a kid. But just so you know, just make sure it's clear. If these things happen, then this is what will immediately also happen. And so the kids test her. But my point is this. When the rules of the game are known, you can move quickly, like Brandon said, and it's fine. Like, you're not going to have to be mean or rude or anything. The guy with the bleached pants comes in, and it's a part of your regular weekly meeting. It's part of your core culture because you've consistently drove it home. He walks in. Tom, dude, your pants aren't acceptable. You're going to have to go home and change. And when you come back, I just need you to fill out this write-up form or whatever, right? Like, it's like, and then you don't have to be mean about it. It's just like 2 + 2 = 4. Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer. You wore your holy shirt. Oh, dang it. All right, I'll see you when you get back. Yeah. And then you got to fill out the thing. And you don't be a jerk about it. But anyway, I don't know.
It's fighting up front.
It's clear communication and then moving quickly, like you said. I like the thing that you said the most is that you move quick. Boom, right then.
Right.
Someone's got a negative attitude. It's like, Rob, come here. I need to talk to you.
Yep.
You know, hey, I'm feeling some weirdness. Yeah. I can't quantify it, and I'm not calling you out. Like, I don't know what's going on in your personal life, but you can't have that while you're here. If you need some time off, let me know. If I can help you and serve you in some way. But you said some like negative things about one of our clients in front of the new guys. That's absolutely unacceptable, and don't do it again.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, that was one of my toughest things. What about you? What about number three? Number three for you.
Number three for me was, and this was true for both my service business and the software business, and everybody will be able to relate to this, I think. It's hesitating to charge what our product was actually worth.
Dude, right? That's going to be my new number one.
Right.
Yeah, that's money.
And
man,
part of it is fear and self-limiting beliefs and all the normal stuff that we talk about. And part of it is just ignorance. Just, I didn't know. We don't understand the true cost of doing business. In fact, while I'm here in Portland with you, we're developing some training stuff. We're putting together a whole bunch of epic boot camp teachings. It's going to go into the Automate, Grow, Sell Bootcamp 3.0, which will be coming out shortly. We're going to be talking about accounting and planning and budgeting and financial stuff and just an array of things. Because people don't know, and none of us knew until someone taught us. We didn't just wake up one day and be like, I understand my COGS and my budget now. Top line and bottom line and gross margin and net margin. And here's my customer acquisition cost. But I don't even say that. I say CAC because that makes me sound more fancy. Like all this was learned somewhere, like in a book here and a forum there. And then some crazy guy said it here. And then it was reaffirmed by my mentor over there. Right. And putting it together is hard. So I didn't charge enough for my stuff. And what here's the consequence of it. Not only are you broke and stressed out and your life is crappier because you have less money, that's the obvious consequence. But what it does is it slows down the momentum of your company. You can't reinvest. You can't move on opportunities. Let's say that a competitor goes for sale. Well, you don't have any money, so you can't move on the opportunity. When you have more margin, you understand your price structure and you understand how to properly price things, you just have more options. It's not about buying jet skis and being an arrogant butthole who thinks he's awesome. It's about pricing your products and your services at the level they need to be so that when you're at scale, it still works and supports middle managers and health benefits and all this other cool stuff that you're going to need to pay for later because mm-hmm. you keep telling everybody you're going to build a $3 million company. Okay, cool. So you keep telling people that's your dream, but you're pricing in a way that you're going to run out of margin completely when you get to 500,000, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to know your numbers and all that. I didn't. Plus, I was freaked out. I mean, I remember the first time I raised my price. I think I was online and I was reading a forum about from Kevin Dabrowski. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah.
He goes way back.
Yeah.
Super, super smart. And he had this book called $600 an hour. And he was just actually in the webinar that I did the other night. The guy's amazing. But he just kept telling everybody, raise our price. We're all idiots and we just need to raise our price. He's like, what? I made like $1,000 in 3 hours today. And he'd like type it in the forum. I'm like, bullcrap, this crazy Canadian made $400 an hour. And I'm like on the gutter. Job or something. And so I just decided on my next job, which is a $300 job, that I was going to just change the price to $600 for no reason. Like I didn't actually add more actual value. I didn't change my process. I just changed the actual price. I was like, well, I'm going to roll the dice. I give it to the lady.
Bold move, Josh.
Right. I just did it, and I thought she might almost be, like, disgusted with me or something. Like, I felt dirty. And she's like, oh, awesome, cool. When can we do it? And I think I stared at her for, like, it felt like tunnel vision for, like, 4 minutes, like, going, wait, what? You're going to do it? Part of it is just doing it, right? Yeah. What's your experience with that?
I'm the exact same way. One thing that always amazed me about my dad was so unabashedly unashamed about giving a price to a customer. I mean, I go on a bid with him and he'd go up to the customer and he'd just rattle off the price and just look him like dead in the eye and just like without even, hesitating 1 ounce and, giving them the number like he had $1 million in the bank. Like he could really care less if they said, yeah, I want to hire you. And I think
your dad was an OG.
Dude, he's
original gangsta sucker. Memes on Facebook where it puts a gold chain around their neck with the thug life hat?
Yeah,
Yeah. I could just picture him being like, it's $400. And it's like, Dr. Phil, please. I can't say those words on my podcast. Anyway.
That's one thing that always impressed me about him is that his closing ratio was always astronomically high and the prices that he got were always exactly what was worth it. He wasn't price gouging. It wasn't some unethical thing that he was doing. And customers always realized the value that he was offering. And I think the biggest problem is just, self-limiting beliefs. People just get stuck in their mind that they're not worth that much. And honestly, what you said was a big mistake that I had in my own business. Because what would end up happening is that I would give someone the price that I knew was in my mind. Like, I'd be like, okay, this is like $675. Oh, gosh, it's too much money. If I tell them $675, if I tell them $675, they're going to say that they don't pay their attorney that much money. It's just like, so it's going to be $420. It's $420. And then they'd be like, really? Is that all? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, let's see. I'm like, oh, no, come on. No. I didn't even $675.
I've so done that. Software thing. I mean, okay, so after our software launch, we do our little thing. We're like, yeah, not good. Okay, no one understands our thing. We have to actually sell it. Well, we get people that would call up, and it's like, back then, our app did like way, way, way less. This is like 3.5-4 years ago. And we only charged $40 a month. And it was a really cool app, and we spent all this money, and it was amazing. People liked it, but no one knew about it. Occasionally, we get people to call up, and they'd be like, $40 a month, eh?
Right.
I'll tell you what.
Let me make you an offer you can't refuse.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you 20. You know, but I'll make sure I write you a nice review on that that app thingy, you know? It's like, and we were like, honestly, as embarrassing as it is, like, we would do that sometimes. And we knew better because we had already made tons of money and sold, like, high item ticket things, like, in the service company. But when you're in something new and maybe your business is new and there's fear and you don't really know what you're doing, we do all kinds of dumb stuff, all of us, including me. Brandon doesn't. He does perfect stuff. But no.
Have you noticed how the people who beat you up on the price the most are the ones who appreciate it the least at the end of it? You know, they're always just, you know, they're the ones that, you know, never appreciate what exactly you offered them. And it's just, you know.
It's absolutely true.
they have most things to complain about. And
yeah. They're focused on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
They're not focused on the experience. They're not focused on it. And some people are just miserable people, by the way. Like, there's a percentage of the population that is just mad all the time.
Yeah.
And guess what? They call carpet cleaning companies to get their carpet cleaned. It's like Russian roulette out there answering your phone. You don't know if you're going to get one. We had a drunk lady one time. Our crew gets there. We actually sold the job. They walk in, and she couldn't even talk. And the crew leader opens the door. He's like, does our scrubs. Like, You know, hi, Mrs. Jones. My name is Travis. I'm here. I'm the crew leader. I'm the person in charge. I'm to exceed your expectations or whatever. And she looks him right in the face at like 9 a.m. and just says, F you. Except she says it, right? And she's like, smells of vodka. And they thought she was kidding in a weird way because she was like in her 60s. But she let him in. And so they started hesitantly cleaning and whatever. I mean, there's some wackos out there. And what I told someone via private message yesterday was don't build your systems around the anomaly.
Yeah, that's a good
one. People will bounce a check to you. Not as much as you think. Most people overthink that fear, but it can happen. Who cares? You will submit a bid to a commercial account and screw it up and it will be not profitable. Who cares? You're going to stop submitting bids to commercial accounts? You could have a customer who complains and gives you a bad review. So you're going to overhaul your entire process for that one squeaky wheel weirdo. Look, if there's a consistent, repeatable problem, fix it. If it's just one of those weird things, just chalk it up to human statistics and move on with your life.
Wow, that's good advice, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's good. Hey, you had some three good ones. I like that.
Three bad ones, which turned into three good ones.
Three bad ones. You turn around.
You did too. Well, let's do this again tomorrow because there's cool. So much more that we'll get into, guys. We very much appreciate you. And I also want to thank everybody that's given an iTunes review. We shot way up over 100 reviews, and they're super nice and kind and generous. Like, I feel crazy reading them. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I can't believe the impact this podcast, and I think the consistency of it is having on a lot of you guys. We really need to just keep sharing it and getting it out there. I know you're going to ramp up into your busy season and whatnot, but if this has added value to you, if you've extracted value and taken from this podcast in any way or the guests, just reciprocate by giving a 5-star iTunes review and doing a quick share. Is it annoying? Yeah, sure. It's a little annoying, but it's not that big of a deal, and it's a digital high five to me. So thank you, Brandon, for your time, and thank you guys for listening.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care, everybody. God bless.